This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:37 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. And before we move on to our next story, which is about the never-ending saga that is Malaysian politics, we spent some time earlier talking about this idea of essential and non-essential jobs, because essentially a Singaporean survey deemed that, understandably and rightfully, the most essential job right now are doctors and nurses, but also some new entrants that perhaps in the past were not so highly regarded included cleaners and garbage collectors, for example. On the other hand, well, deemed non-essential, topmost in that list were artists. So we've just been asking you whether or not you agree with that list, and also whether or not the pandemic has in any way changed or shifted the way you viewed certain jobs. So we do have Munif Malik saying, I'm just glad they didn't even bother to list influencers there, for it would surely be top of the non-essentials list. They effectively dismissed influencers as being an actual job. Having said that, social media managers were part of it. Very different, I know, from influencers, but kind of playing in the same ballpark. And they also made the non-essentials list. So I do think that a little bit of dismissiveness edging its way into social media professions, unfortunately, in that survey. If you would like to weigh in, do get in touch with us. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Now on to heavier things. So we're going to be talking for the next half hour about the latest developments in Malaysian politics, simply because a lot has happened over the past week and the weekend, and we just wanted to see what's going on and what it all means. So this is going to be a long one, bear with me. Firstly, the Straits Times reported that sources are saying that Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin is gearing up for a snap general election. And that was somewhat confirmed by Bersatu Supreme Council member Muhammad Faiz Naaman. Additionally, another council member, Wan Saiful Wan Jan, said that snap polls would help to address these questions of legitimacy that keep coming up and also create a more stable Perikatan National Government. However, analysts have said that Bersatu would not survive snap polls, since for Malay voters, it lacks a sense of identity like UMNO and PAS. And also, speaking of UMNO, they wouldn't want to compromise on seat allocations, as it's in their interest to win the most seats so that they can then nominate a party member for Prime Minister. And outside of that, not everyone's keen on elections. Pakatan Harapan leaders like Shah Alam MP Khalid Samad say it's too expensive and a waste of money. And we're having this conversation about a snap general election against a backdrop of a potential countercoup. So there has been talk of a move to regain Putrajaya that would see Pakatan secure a parliamentary majority to push a vote of no confidence in the Dewan Rakyat. But those plans are on shaky ground because, according to sources from PKR, there are, surprise, surprise, disagreements on who would become Prime Minister. So while Amanah, DAP and Warisan allegedly want Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad as Prime Minister and Datuk Sri Anwar Ibrahim as Deputy, the latter is hesitant. This is supposedly a six-month plan before Datuk Sri Anwar takes over as Prime Minister. But PKR leaders say that Anwar has waited too long and doesn't want his shot at being number one to be cancelled for a third time. Okay, we're coming to the end, but it doesn't stop there, because as Pakatan tries to convince more MPs to join the cause, two Sabah assemblymen from UPCO aligned to Warisan declared their support for Perikatan. On top of that, attempts to lure MPs to leave Warisan have been confirmed, including Lahad Datu MP Datuk Muhammadin Ketapi. 36 PKR leaders, meanwhile, including former Deputy Women Chief Dr. Aroya Alwi, also left Pakatan and will become friendly to Perikatan. So, amid all the horse trading, experts say that a law is needed to prevent party hopping so that future state and federal governments can govern for a full term uninterrupted. And this could also include a measure where a two-thirds majority vote in parliament is needed to call early elections. So, yeah, I'm sorry about the length of that, but that really does encompass or try to encompass some of the issues that have cropped up. This is, of course, part of or a continuation of a story that began I was going to say in January or February, but actually it probably goes back even further than that. But we haven't seen much political stability in the last few months. We have seen different political leaders touting that they can bring people political stability, but we're not seeing much of that in reality. I also wanted to explore a little bit this idea of the Malay voter or the Malay vote, simply because it's something that is thrown about as a very casual phrase. And I think that it probably does everyone a disservice to not actually analyze that a little bit closer, so that when we do hear politicians and, for that matter, analysts using the phrase, we know exactly who it is that we're referring to. Because, you know, I really doubt that the Malay vote as such is a monolith, and it would be foolish to regard it as so. So that's what we're talking about, Malaysian politics. If you would like to weigh in, if you have any thoughts on all of that, you can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be speaking after this with political scientist Dr. Wong Chin Huat. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:45. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. We're talking about general updates, because it's been quite a busy time in the Malaysian political scene. And we're now crossing over to political scientist Dr. Wong Chin Huat. Chin Huat, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Lynn. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the big question. What is the likelihood of a snap election happening after the tabling of Budget 2021? And right now, who is and isn't in favour of it?
Well, the choice hinges on two persons. One is the PM, the next is the King. I don't think the PM wants it if he has a choice, because his party is not going to have an easy battle. But if he's pushed to the corner, he might want to try his luck. But whether or not he gets his way, really go back to the King. And the only good thing about to have it after the budget is that you dangle a carrot in front of the voter and say, this is what you're going to get, it would mean you get it.
Mm. So with the current political landscape looking the way it does, what would a snap election solve? And conversely, what can't it solve? What might it worsen?
There are two issues that need to be solved. One is legitimacy, and the second is stability. And I suspect a snap election may not solve either. The simple reason is this, that if the legitimacy problem comes from realignment, especially if parties quit their coalitions or MPs quit their parties and so on, and that's tied back to stability. The simplest way of ensuring stability is to have a coalition winning outright a simple majority after elections. But this is almost impossible. Contrary to what most people think, UMNO and PAS, even with Muhyiddin Bersatu, is unlikely to win 112 seats on their own. The simple reason is this, that GPS clearly would want to keep its options open, meaning that it would contest on its own and prepare to come in again with PN if they do well, but there's no guarantee. Similarly, Sabah parties are wild cards, whether it's Barisans or those in Bersatu or UMNO now, but most of them are in UMNO, those, right? These are wildcards. So they would only join the government if PN or Mufakat win 112 seats from West Malaysia, which has 165 seats. Now, that's almost an mission impossible. Why? It means that Pakatan must be defeated so badly that it win 53 or less seats. Considering that it has won 80 seats in GE12 and GE13 before it came to power. So for that to happen, right, you really need to have multi-corners, for example, an effective third force that split the votes, that PH cannot even win 54 seats. Almost impossible.
And you referenced this idea that it would not benefit Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's party, which is Bersatu. And some political analysts are also saying that Bersatu might not survive should there be another election. Firstly, do you agree with that?
We have to look at two scenarios. If it's go on its own to fight Mufakat on one hand and PH on the other hand, there's a good chance that it would be wiped out completely. If it plays along with UMNO and PAS, who have no reason to give Basatu privilege, you know, being the number biggest party and so on. So Basatu may survive for another term, but it may become Semangat 46, a splinter party of UMNO in the 90s, or Berjasa, a splinter parties of PAS after 1978. Both parties did not last long. They get absorbed eventually.
And part of that conversation, and the reason why I think Bersatu is often spoken of in the same breath as UMNO and PAS, is because there's this idea of it's about who and what Malay voters want to see in power. And this was something that we were talking about earlier, because I want to know, when analysts use that term, Malay voter, who are we actually talking about?
Well, a good question. We talk about more than 50% of the electorate. And sometimes people like to think that there's a divide between urban and rural, which is not true, for the simple reasons that Malaysians have been so urbanized that we have about 75% of the populations in urban area, and probably higher than that is in West Malaysia. So you're talking about most Malays are actually urban or at least semi-urban. The diversity is probably much more in two other dimensions. One is class, and this is people often overlook that even in urban area that the working class may not be happy with the mainstream parties in the past that was with BN. And now it depends on which side they are. And the other dimension, of course, is on cultural values, whether how much they look at religions and so on. And that's a broad spectrum. Yeah.
So with that said then, is there any real understanding of what it would take for Pakatan to be able to pull in this the Malay vote, despite the fact that, or, you know, because it is so diverse?
Right. If we go back to say, despite the diversity, there are probably two things we can generalize about what the Malay voters want, or most of them want. One is protections of Malay power and interest, sort of like the continuity of the status quo, so that they can remain competitive or they can withstand competition, the other way to put it. Second is about reductions of corruptions and wealth disparity. And that's very much within Malay. It's an intra-Malay dimension. What we are talking about is that, to sum it this way, that a lot of Malays would want to keep MVP and so on, but at the same time, they're not happy that the benefits of MVP go to those people who are well-connected. The Malay word is other cable. And so if for PH to win them back, PH need to be able to address these two, that how do you actually capitalize on this anger against corruption, so wealth disparity, and at the same time ensuring that Malays are not losing their power. But that go back to the questions, how do you play this without alienating the non-Malays and liberal Malays who want to see the country moving away from communal politics? So we come down to one simple question of what I think that what PH has not done enough, or perhaps have not seriously thought through. The concept is called social coalition. What we have seen is that we have always looked at political coalition, meaning coalitions of political parties that get together and they team up and they decide who to be PM, DPM and so on. And we assume that they would pull their voters together. But their voters are very different, even though they may support the same coalitions, right? So now the question here is that if you want PH to be able to win, PH cannot think about winning Malay votes only or non-Malay votes only, but they need to bring their supporters from different factions to come together and say, okay, we settle for a common agenda, everyone gets something, and therefore we'll keep it that way. And that coalition, if we need a number, I would say it's 55%, because with 55%, despite malapportionments and gerrymandering, there's a good chance it would actually win a solid majority. If you have that, you are free from defections. You would be able to push reform. But reform would need to be articulated in a way that people can... That it has to be articulated in a way that the different segments see that this everyone gets something from it, rather than something pushed down because this is universal values and so on.
And with that said, I think we're going to be diving into some of the the issues of conflict that have come up. But like we said, we're talking about this against this idea, the backdrop of potential snap elections on one hand, potential counter coup on the other. So with that said, you know, you've talked about this need to have maybe a more pragmatic approach. But should we have some sort of change in government, or should we be prioritizing retaining what we have right now and waiting till the next GE?
Okay, either way, I think it would not be sustainable. Why? Because that we do not have a functioning government or a functioning opposition.
Right.
So we need to get them functioning. And so what we need is actually an inter-party deal. What do I mean by that? That's actually being proposed by Bersih 2.0, Gabungan Bertindak Malaysia and Angkatan Belia Islam Malaysia, ABIM, just earlier last week. The proposal is for the party to sort out and accept the election outcome. They can prepare for the next fight, but in between, they would actually need to they need to play their role so that politics can be more professionalized. So with that, we're talking about parliamentary reform. We talk about separations of public prosecutor's office from the Attorney General's chamber. We have to talk about public funding, political funding reform, and so on. So in many ways, we have to change the way we do politics, because if you can accept that, we can have political stability even without a majority government. There's a good example that I think Malaysians should look at. There's a country called Denmark. We all know that Denmark plays football and daily product, but you look at the politics. For 30 years since 1990, Denmark has had 14 governments, all of them a minority government. They were stable. You never have a government get voted out with no confidence. No government has lost their budget. So everything's go through. Why? Because people accept that. So the winner need to treat the loser fairly, and the loser need to accept and say, okay, you are a temporary winner, I'll work hard to beat you in the next round. So people have something much more long-term. This is not just about being fairness. This is actually the analogy I like to draw to is the distinction between a gambler and an insurance buyer. If you are into gambling, you want to win big, and you don't mind losing big, and that's where you have all this volatility and so on, and instability. On the other hand, if you are buying insurance, what you want is something much more manageable. The up and downs won't be huge, so you can plan something forward. You can be more rational. So it's about changing the paradigm. If you don't change this, you may have a new government, but a new government may have an even shorter lifespan than this one. So what's the point?
So in that context then, you know, if we wanted to move towards, you know, beyond a conceptual paradigm shift, what would the first steps need to look like? Earlier you talked about reform, but, you know, again, these are very big sounding ideas. They often feel, you know, like there's so much that needs to get done before you can even take the first step.
Right. So, I mean, to have reform, of course, you need power. So the ball is in the court of the government. Now, if Muhyiddin want to give Malaysia stability, what he can offer is to offer opposition that until you bring me down, I am the government, I'm going to reform the parliament so that you have constructive roles to play in the parliament. So you have to do your job. I'm going to recognize your shadow cabinet. So you got to get your senior MPs as shadow minister. They check on my minister. And but when you get into the job, you would have to deal with all kind of details, you know, on governance. I'll give you certain access to government information for you to form effective policy. In return, you won't have that much of time to keep on counting how many frogs that you can attract. So I get the stability, you get some role to play, and your best interest is that. And when the next elections come, you'll be in a better position now. For me, is that I buy the time.
Chin Huat, on that note, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
That was political scientist Dr. Wong Chin Huat presenting a possible new way forward, but also talking to us about the political updates that we've been seeing over the last week, especially towards the latter half. If you would like to weigh in on how things are going at the moment and, you know, how you feel about a potential counter coup or a snap general election or a paradigm shift, these are the options we appear to have. You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.